Accession number 14975, Mr. William Rochester, final reel 22.
Mr. Rochester, reel 22. Was it civilian staff or military staff?
Oh, no, it was all civilian staff. There was one sergeant from the medical corps. He was supposed to be in charge of the lad. There was about 30 of us there in this little one ward, you see. And upstairs in the ward, it was old people. We spent a lot of time, the ones that could climb the stairs, go upstairs with the old people, and then we used to take them over in the chairs and pushing them around the place and that, you know. We just made ourselves happy. And then when we, Ian and them go down, we started organising these things just to keep it going. And they were coming, what we're doing next, like, what have you think next for us, and things like that. And we had all kinds going on, and it was broke the monotony.
By this time, of course, you're much more active and obviously out a bit. Mm-hmm. How long did it take from your initial hospitalisation in England to the convalescent situation you're in now?
Well, oh, I don't know, but Ina came down once, and she went back home. Bill, my son was about 5 years old. He was born in 39. So he was around about 5 years old then. And she'd come down the first time without him. She got a telegram saying I was seriously injured, or some damn thing. If it had been a different word, she would have got a free trip down. But because it wasn't dangerous, it was serious. If it had been dangerous, she would have got a free trip. But she had to pay for down there. She stayed down about a week or 10 days or something. Went back. Now, she come down again, and she brought my son down with her and stayed in the same place with this nurse's mother, who was just outside the gate. Well, we saw the son. Ina brought him in on a morning. He come into me and, hello, Dad, ta-da, and away he went. He got in touch with the engineer of the hospital. We never saw Bill all day long. We had to look for him at night when we were going, I knew he was going home. He was all over the place with them. And he can only remember one nurse, a black nurse called Letty. We had a good time. It was pretty good.
When you finished there, what state were you in then? How far recovered had your recovery gone?
Well, when Ina went away the first time, she said she'd be back in 3 weeks. Now, we had some tennis on, and the tennis court was built like side. This was grass, and the tennis court was there, you see. I was sitting down on the grass. I could sit down on the grass, but I couldn't get up. I had this arm in plaster, this hand in plaster, and a leg in plaster. So I couldn't get up. So I was sitting outside on the bank watching them, and when they finished, they all said, cheerio. I said, hey, what about me? What about you now? You're fat enough. You don't want any meal tonight. They went away and left me. They come back like, it was just a bit of fun, but never mind. It was like that. And then I couldn't hobble around at all. I had this iron on, and I could just hardly hobble. They brought me there with a chair, you see. And she said, I'll be down in a couple of weeks' time, Bill. I said, I'll see you at the gate. She said, you're not, you know. I said, I'll see you at the gate, look, when you come out the bus. I'll be there waiting for you. And I was. So I was able to walk. Within a fortnight of her being down, I was able to walk across. That was in from Market Bosworth, the Getty Well part, bit, you know. And after that, I just progressed. And eventually, I was moved. We got a shop started. I went down to the Leicester in the bus. And they never took any money off me. They said, get in the bus. The bus fare said, get it out of the pocket, you know, take it out of there. If I wanted to go to the toilet at the bus stand, I used to go down the toilet. Nobody there. I'd come back in. All the lasses were standing talking. They were conductresses. And I said, I want to volunteer the first time. She said, yes. What do you want me to do? I said, I want you to open my pants. I want to go and get a pain. I can't open them. Oh, we'll all do it. I said, no, you'll not. I just want one. So she come to the top of the stairs, she opened me a couple of buttons for me, and I went down. Well, I could use these two fingers to get to manage, and then come back again. Right, will you fasten me up now? Well, you had to. Yeah, out eating. And then we were out one day with Tommy and I went to the cinema when we were out there. And I had a cup of tea first in the cafe, and I could use them two fingers. It's just to get a cup with a big handle, so I could put that finger through the handle and grip them like that, so like that, and I could drink it. Well, this time, of course, it was too big and I couldn't grip it plenty. When I lifted it up, it spilled and it went all over the place. We got dried off of it. Then we went to the cinema, and coming downstairs from the cinema, down the concrete steps, I wanted to go to the loo this time. It was a bit later. And the loo was on the landing, but down some more steps. So I went down there, and the other ones went this way to get out, you see. I went down the toilet, nobody there, so I come back. I said, "You'll have to undo me pants, Tommy." So I'm standing with me back against the wall. She's bending down, undoing some buttons. People are coming down the stairs, and they're going on me. So when they got close enough, I started shouting, "Leave me alone, leave me alone. I'm a poor wounded soldier. You shouldn't do to this. I can't help myself." She never forgive me. But we had a good time. And then I got moved to another place. I never got to that place because I can't even remember where it was. I was moved to another hospital near a home.
But were you in hospital blues, the wounded?
No, I kept my khaki. I kept my khaki uniform. I was told to move. I got all my papers to move. And I was going to go the next day. But the next morning, there was a telephone call for me via the matron. And I went to see her. And she told me that my mum had died. And she had a pass ready for me to go straight home. So I phoned home. I phoned to Birtley to tell somebody to go and tell Ina, we didn't have a home or anything, that I was coming home. And she met me at the station. I went to my mum's funeral and all that. And then while I was at home, I was posted to Dryburn down here. So I went to Dryburn. And I was in Dryburn Hospital down here when I got my DCM.
You got your DCM for what you'd done at Roaring.
Mm-hmm.
What did the citation say? Do you remember?
You can read it if you like. It's on there. No,
but it was very much to do with the fact that you had these young.
No, nothing to do with that. No, just said I had a young company or something. I was sergeant major of a young company. I don't know, kept them going and this, that and the other, for the effort of keeping them going and doing a job or some damn thing like that. It was for nothing that I did, actually.
Did it surprise you, getting the DCM?
Yes, definitely.
How did you get the news?
I got a letter in the hospital. It came to the hospital, and the major of the RAMC, a driver, brought it in to me to give it to me. And he said it's from the... somewhere. He says it's important, would you open it now, you might have something to tell, you know, to do. So I opened it, and it just said that I've got a such and such a date in the London Gazette or something. I'd been awarded the Distinguished Conduct Medal. That was it. And that was in October.
What were your initial reactions to reading that?
I didn't believe it. I've never believed it. And there's only one man, there was a lieutenant with me. Well, he's retired now. He was an architect. He was a student at Darlington University when the war started, and he was called up. He was the architect for the new hospital in Newcastle, the Freeman. You asked me, have I ever thought why I got the DCM? And I've always thought that somebody else should. I hadn't done anything warranting me to get it. I mean, I was doing was my job as a sergeant major. The skipper was killed, and I just carried on and doing. The young officers were wounded or killed. The second in command come up, and he got badly wounded. So I was just doing my job. Now then, I never thought that I should have had something like that, because I've read citations of other people. I'm a member of the Normandy Veterans Association, and every 3 months we get about 10 pages, and half of them are citations from somebody else, you know. My God, they should have more than the medal. They've looked what they've done. I've done nothing, and I've got the same thing. And I don't think it was fair. Well, this fella came up. He was an architect. He built the. He was an architect for the new hospital in Newcastle. He's a Mason, and he was assistant provincial grandmaster, deputy provincial grandmaster of Northumberland. Then he retired after his years of that, and he's now assistant in the Mark or something. And we were friends. We're at his installation as a master, and every now and then, just odd times, you know. And I had brought him down. He'd interviewed, invited him down to our Mark Lodge on my 80th birthday, which is a year ago in February. He came down, and we had a good night together. I used to run reunion dinners, but I stopped doing that because they wouldn't tell you they were coming. About 7 or 8 people would tell me they were coming, and they wanted food, and 120 would turn up. You know, well, you kind of do food like that. So I just chucked it away. I warned them about 3 years, and then finished up stopping. And yeah, we came through, and I was talking to him, and he said, "You got on?" He said, "I see you're going to give your medals in." I said, "Yeah." "How do you know that?" "Oh," he said, "I've got friends around, Bill." I said, "I should never have got that. I never believed that I should have that medal because I didn't do anything for it. I was doing my job." I said, "Yeah, I suppose you were, Bill. Who was your company commander? What happened to him?" I said, "Oh, he was killed before we got to Rowrea Village." "Uh-huh. What happened to your platoon commanders?" "I said, I didn't have any. They were wounded before we got there." "What happened to your second commander?" I said, "Oh, he got there. Oh, by the way," I said, "one officer got there. One platoon commander got there. But he had a bandage tied around his... He had a handkerchief tied around his hand. And it was all blood." And I said, "I sent him away at the first aid to get a dressing on properly. But I never saw him anymore." He said, "That's right. I saw him about 10 years afterwards as an officer, as a judge of one of the tribunals in Germany." Ronnie Bell, he's sitting on the end of the photograph. And he said, "What about your second in command?" I said, "Well, he was only, about an hour, half an hour or something. He got badly wounded and he's away as well." He said, "That's right. How many sergeants did you have?" I said, "No. You're just on your own." I said, "That's right." He said, "Well, what else do you want but a medal?" He said, "You were doing 5 jobs. You did the jobs there and you kept the lads going and you kept your point and you kept your place. You still held the ground that you had at the beginning. You're entitled to something like that." And I didn't realise that I must have done something. But nothing like these citations you see and read, you know, where they go and chuck grenades at blokes.
Yes, it wasn't an incident. No. It was for a period of time.
That's right.
that you're in command.
Yeah. I had nobody there to take over, to do anything, you know. You do it all yourself, all the time. Even those 2 young officers that came up, they didn't want anything to do. They came up and got killed. The second in command walked up, stood in front of that 5-bar gate, pointing his fingers out and telling people what was on there and this, that and the other, you know. And he just stood long enough for the machine gun to get a good aim at him and press the trigger. Mm-hmm. He died in hospital anyhow as well. I knew his leg was off because his right leg was only hanging on by a bit of skin. We just had to put that on the stretcher. It was just hanging down by a bit of flesh and that, you know. He shoved that on. But what I didn't know, he died in the next tent to me when I was in hospital. Padre come and told me he'd been wounded in here as well, in the lower part of his body. He'd gone into there.
Were any of the chaps in your particular unit that got medals for Rory? Did you know of?
No, not that I know of. I think there was somebody in A Company who got an MM. I think I've read that, but that's about all. I've been trying to find out if there was anybody else, but it was just... There was an MM. I don't know who it was, though.
You said you mentioned that you handed your medals in. To whom were you handing them?
To the museum.
The military museum, the Durham Light Infantry Museum.
Durham Museum. Well, they're far better there. They're only lying in the drawer upstairs. I gave them to my daughter years ago. I got them priced. There was £1,000 when I priced them. And I said, "They're yours, Pet, when they go." She said, "What about your son, Bill?" I said, if I give them to Bill, the first time he wants a penny, he'll flog it. But I'll give it to you you can look after until you really, if you really got stuck for money, then I advise you to sell them to the museum. They'll buy them off you. And since then, of course, the last one I had before I put them in was £1,300. They're valued at. Well, that's lying in a drawer upstairs. So I thought I'd put them where it's safe in the museum.
Is there a pension that comes with the DCM?
No.
Is it a small?
No.
Nothing like that?
Oh, yes, yes. There's when I got me, I'm not sure, I've got a service pension and a disability one. Now, one of those pensions, when it came out, I got £6 a day for me DCM. I don't know what it is now, like.
So your Dryburn Hospital, still recovering. What happened to you next?
Well, we were there, and I was a senior. Again, I was a senior soldier there, you know. And this is not very good, this. At Christmas time, there was an officer there. I think he's a medical officer. I'm not sure what he was now, but he was a major. He was there. And he called me in one day and he said, I'm going to send some of the boys on leave at Christmas. I said, oh, that's very kind of you. How many? Well, he said, about 15 to 20 on leave. I said, oh, that's great. I'll sort them out. He said, right, you do that. You're better in touch with them. I'll sort them out, the ones that's going. He said, right, you are. So I had a meeting with them. All one night, I got them all together, and I said, I've got about 15 or 20 people. Let's make it 20. I'll push them for 20 to go on leave. Now, the people that live in Durham move over there. The people that live a long way away get over that side. Okay? Right. Now, I want 20 to go on leave. Anybody want to go on leave? They all did. I said, well, will you sort yourselves out? I said, you. Will you be in charge? Get the names of all these people, and we'll have them in a hat sometime later on tonight, and we'll draw out the people that goes on leave. But what I want you to do is put the long distance ones separate to the home ones. Why? I said, I'll tell you about that later on. So they said, okay. I said, no, half and half. 10 home and 10 long distance. Right you are. So they did that, and they come back and got the names. I said, now, we've got 10 people going. You are going, and 10 people are going. You come out the road. Now, you are not going on leave yet at the moment. No. I said, right, you live, where do you live? Bishop Auckland. I said, where do you live? First one. Just outside of London. I said, right. Are you due for a warrant? No, I've had one, sir. Right. You pay this man's bus fare home. Are you due for a warrant? He said, yes. I said, right. You get a warrant and give it to him. Now, you travel as his name on your leave. Christmas. Don't forget, you swap names at Christmas. But you pay him and he'll give you a warrant. And I want no other problems, mind. I want you back on time, both of you. Or you'll never get another thing and you'll suffer for it. All right? Yes, right. Out. Next one. And we did that. That the local one, he got this fella paid a bus fare, and this fella got a warrant for him, which they couldn't afford a warrant. They wouldn't have got home. It was common sense to do that, you see. So I went and told him. I gave him a list of names. I said, we've got them. I said, all right. Now, they were going to go about 2 or 3 days. They were getting I didn't know how much they were going to get leave at the time. About 2 or 3 days before Christmas, he sent for me and said, they'll have to go on leave on such and such a day. I said, oh yes, any particular reason? He said, no, it's all right, but I want them to go on leave such and such a day. I said, all right. And I came away, and the sergeant came out after me. He said, can I have a word with you, Sergeant Major? I said, yes, why? He said, well, do you know what he's doing? Why are you sending them on leave? I said, there's someone up, but at the moment, I don't know what he's doing, but I would like to know, because he's not sending them away out of his heart. I know that. I've been here long enough to know that. He said, no, he's having a dinner of the local council people and from Durham and all that, in the drill, in the dining room, and he's going to use your Christmas. Ah, oh, he said. I said he's not. He's going to use your Christmas turkeys and things for these people to have a dinner. Oh, I said, thanks very much, but you keep that quiet. So I went down to see him. I said, look, I'd like to interview with the major, to the sergeant. He said, very good, I'll fix it. So I went down to see him. I said, how long are these people going on leave for? I said, 3 days. I said, that's not good. They'll have to go on for a week. They're going to London, some of them. Well, that's a long way to go, just for 3 days, a week at least. So we had a bit of discussion, and we got a week. I said, right. I said, right, well, I'll make the ration cards out for them. Oh, no, they can't have ration cards. I said, why not? Why can't they have ration cards? Because this is not a proper meal, not a proper holiday, I'm just letting them go. Oh, I said, well, I'm sorry. They're not going unless they get food card. I said, you can't send a person home to live on his wife and children and eat their food without getting some cards to get food himself. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No cards, no leave. And they'll agree with me when I tell them. And, you know, he hung on till the last bloody day before he gave in. But he gave in. And I got him a week's leave, a week's card, because he was eating their grub down there. Mine, we'll let him know. We knew that as well. I did. I let him know that.
What was his name? Do you know his name?
No. No. I've no idea what they called him. And he would have shot me, I think, if he'd had a chance. That was only one thing. The other thing was, he used to come round at night time, 2 and 3 o'clock in the early morning, and flash a torch to see if he'd heard that people are staying out all night. Come round and flash a torch on you. You know, see if you were all in. Well, he came in our room one day, and he woke me up and asked him what was the matter. And he said, just having to check. I said, you don't have a check in here for anybody like that. I'm responsible for these people. And if they're not in here, I'll report them to you. And I'll get the other ones to do the same. But don't come back any more like that, sir, through the night, or you'll be in trouble. About 3 days afterwards, we heard that he was coming around again. The sergeant told me he was good to us. So I got two ammunition boots in bed with me, and I didn't go to sleep. He come in and flashed his torch, and I threw a pair of bullet boots. I'll throw the boots at him, and I hit the torch of the boots, and there was Russians on. He was going to have me on a charge for striking a medic, an officer, and all kinds of things. I said, you do that, you do that, you do that, sir. I said, you'll never be here 5 minutes afterwards, the way you've been going on. I said, don't you think we know? You don't you think we don't know why you're sending the people on holiday?
In effect, that
is disgusting, wasn't it?
Yeah. In effect, the discipline of a room in a military hospital or a military side of a hospital was with the senior soldier in the room.
That's right. Yeah. Another time. We weren't allowed in the dining room. They were decorating it out for some reason. So they all had to have the meals in the ward. Well, that's fair enough, you see. So it was about the first meal I had, I think, when I was there. So we got a nice big white dinner plate put down in front of us in the in the ward. And they came round and there was, what was it? A piece of toast put down on the plate. We've got a slice of toast. And the lad started in. I said, hang on, this is not your breakfast. He said, oh, you're kidding, this is it. I said, well, we should have an egg or some potato or something on there. You can't, that's not your breakfast. Oh, yes, it is. So I go up and I hobble down down the corridor. We're up top ward on the right-hand side, well, second up top on the right-hand side. And right down there, opposite the door where you come in, there was a German ward. So I bowled into the German ward and they were having 2 boiled eggs. And we were having a slice of toast. Nothing else. I thought, oh, no, I can't have this. Now, a week before that, I'd been over here at the British Legion as a guest of honour. And, I forgot his name now. The old MP from round here, from Durham, he was the war minister. At the time, and down there, and he was there speaking as well. So we're sitting next to each other there speaking, and he talks about half an hour. And I said, that was a good speech, but he didn't tell him anything. He said, that's a good MP. That's a good MP. And he went on about that and other things. And I said, well, when I got this, that was one night, you see, and a few nights, days afterwards, we got this slice of toast. I thought, oh no, he's going to have to get this. So we parceled it, about three of us. Got a box or something from one of the nurses or sisters or someone, wrapped it up and put a note in. And I went to the toilet there, fortunately, and there was a magazine pinned on the back of the door. And on it, in a little black box, it says, "Come now, O ye brethren, now is the time to rise and call that man cannot live on bread alone." And I cut that out and I stuck it on the toast. Wrapped it up, put another letter in to say that this was the breakfast of the British troops, the injured British troops, while the Germans, German customers in ward such and such had two boiled eggs. Do you think that's right, sir? And parcel it away. And we had it delivered to his house up at Erpeth. He lived up at Erpeth. I can't even remember what they call him now. But anyhow, he come down to see us. And I put in, and I said, and if you're going to pay a visit, don't advertise it. Just come down and walk into room 17. That was it, room 17. I'll be in there and I'll take you around and let you have a look at something that you would never see if you advertised that you were coming. And he did. He come round. But he didn't have to hit. That bloke was shifted. That made you a shifted in no time after that. God. That was Drybone Hospital. That's 50 years ago.
What was the state of your recovery now?
Now? Oh, I'm fine at the moment.
In the hospital, in Drybone?
Oh, in Drybone, yeah. Well, I was all right, you know. I was able to get around a bit. I did a silly thing, because every Sunday I was allowed to go home. I had my uniform, and I used to go out, and I got a lift on a Sunday, except one Sunday, and I walked so far right to Pertley Main Street before a car stopped to give me a lift. And I said, well, I'm here now, I might as well walk. And you know, I was in bed 3 days. It nearly killed me.
Were you receiving any examinations with a view to ascertaining the degree of your wounds?
No.
Getting back to the army or what have you?
No. No, I wasn't. I came on leave from there. I had about 3 months leave.
This would be 1945. What time would this
1945. I was discharged in March 1945.
Discharged from the army, mm-hmm. Unfit.
And I was working for the ordnance factory down here 3 weeks before I was discharged. I got a job down here. I got called up here instead of the dual man. There was a re-something man, reconstruction or something, man up there interviewing the people, what you like. And he said, you should sit the civil service examination. I said, I'm too old for that. He said, not really. I said, you have to be 16, man. If you're over 16, you're too old. He said, oh no, that's finished now. Have you got 12 years in the army? I said, yes. Have you got your army first class certificate of education? I said, yes, you can qualify. So I went to Newcastle, and there was about 400 of them. We sat the exam and qualified, and I got a job down here in the ordnance factory.
So you started the ordnance factory whilst you're still in effect in the army?
Still in the army. I was on leave from the army, waiting to be discharged, yes.
So to discharge you, did you have to go before a medical board for the extent of your wounds, etc.?
No. I was discharged on 80% discharged. I had about 2 years like that. Then I was called for a medical in Newcastle, behind the city centre now, down that way somewhere. And that was brought down to 60%. Then after a few more years, I was called again. You're supposed to go every 2 years, but it's nearly 20 years in that one. You keep getting a chit. I'm due in February, next February for him, but I'll get another chit then. Another couple of years or 3 years or something. It's about 20 years since I had a medical. And I dropped down to 40, and 40% now, and I've been that for donkey's years. 40%.
And your pension for your injuries is based on that percentage?
Mm-hmm. I'm 40%. 40% injury, and that's I'm based on there.
So when they informed you that they were discharging you, what was the system of discharging you? Happened to you?
I got my pay book, which told me I'm discharged. And I got a letter saying that I was discharged from there, then I'd have to report to the, the door people or something like that, you know. Well, I was already working for the ordnance office. I got a job down here as a clerk, and I couldn't write. I'd stick a pen through like that.
There was no collecting of civilian clothes as that wasn't the normal kind of discharging of the army.
Yes, I got a note from, I don't know where it came from, but I got a civilian suit, a navy blue civilian suit. I think that was all, but it wouldn't fit me. Didn't fit me.
So your discharge came at the end of your 3 months leave. Did you have to go back to hospital before this happened?
No.
You just got the letter through the post?
Yeah, I got a letter from the post, from the War Office, saying that I'd been discharged on such and such a time. That's as far as I remember, that nothing happened at all like that. Then I got a letter for the medical to go to such and such a place, and I've got one now that was